Be an opportunity for questions and developing the discussion after we hear from Colin Mayer from the Improvement Service.
Good afternoon, folks. I was just counting on the programme there. I'm now, in 4.5 hours, the 11th speaker who stood up in front of you. I suspect there is some provision in international law that this is cruel and inhumane treatment, so I will trot through this as quickly as I can. I begin with a confession. I was a member of the review group set up to look at policing in Scotland, and there was a number of meetings of that group across the winter before the thing became slightly more tightly focused, shall I say, within government, who haven't much wished to speak with us across the last few months. I put that down to my deodorant. But we did, I think, start out with a fair amount of collective momentum about the importance of policing and the need for improvement and development in policing itself. And I think some of that momentum might usefully be recaptured. So in what I say just now about the option analysis the government has done, the outline business case presented and so on, partly I'd like us to think about how do we use that to move this on a bit rather than simply statically sit in bunkers now and heave things at each other around different options that we may prefer. I'd like to take the issue of is a single force the only option and say, well, option for what? Because we did actually begin the process of review with a fairly thoroughgoing look at what was it we were trying to reform and improve. And I think some of that's been lost as the review proceeded. It's become narrowed down and narrowed down to largely a set of concerns about cost efficiency and the financial sustainability of current policing arrangements. I think the outline business case, which I'll comment on, is frankly very weak indeed around its analysis of structures and the merits of different structural options. But it expresses something I think we can reconstruct and perhaps have a franker discussion about as a route forward. So if you bear with me, I'll proceed through that as a trot. Let me begin, however, in the spirit of failing to advance things, with where I think there is consensus, and I think consensus has come through across the morning and into the afternoon. Clearly, the Scottish Government and Parliament sovereignly have the right to determine ultimately the shape and structure of policing within Scotland. There's no argument about that at all, nor should there be any argument about that. I think the second point's important, though. Exactly as the Parliament is democratically empowered, part of that empowerment is also accountability, and therefore there is a need for whatever decision-making takes place around policing or any other public services, that that should be transparent. We actually understand why things are being done, and challengeable, because this is a democracy and people are free to challenge and hold to account the politicians that they elect. There's an absolute consensus police budgets are going to decline in real terms. That seems to me to be the one thing nobody has contended at all across this morning and early afternoon. And I think the final consensus has been strongly around we all wish to maintain and improve outcomes for individuals, families and communities in Scotland. And importantly, those outcomes include their safety and their security as citizens in this country. So we start off not entirely divided. There's a range of things we are agreed upon, and I think it's how that's taken forward. When this review process started, there were a range of discussions about, well, what is it we're trying to do here? Some of them were unambiguously about efficiency and sustainability, financially speaking. So could we improve the deployment of police resources to frontline policing, even if there were budget reductions? That we should maintain the service to the public, even if that meant fundamentally rethinking other aspects of organisation. Even with frontline functions, are there ways in which we could rationalise and improve the delivery of those frontline policing functions to make them not merely effective, but cost-effective in the way they're delivered into the future? And a lot of the work that Neil led and spoke to this morning around better target operating models was entirely about how do we deliver police functions more cost-effectively to the public. There was agreement that outcomes really mattered. There wasn't necessarily a huge amount of clarity about what those outcomes were, but there was agreement that outcomes mattered, and particularly that whatever we did here, we shouldn't undermine the admirable trends across the last decade in the safety and security of the Scottish population, nor should we undermine the local partnerships, which, as David said, have contributed massively in the round to helping us have the safety and security outcomes we've got. There was agreement that we wanted national policing functions to be properly accountable, but also we wanted local policing functions to be locally accountable. So there was a recognition that the way we've got the system just now is slightly strangulated between the national and the local in how accountability takes place, and at least there was a good case for having a sharp look at that to try and ensure that all future policing arrangements in Scotland are fully accountable nationally and locally back to communities. So there wasn't a huge amount of contention about that, but as we've proceeded from December, would be my time point in that one, all the way through this process, gradually we've ended up with an outline business case that has apparently abandoned any interest in making a significant statement that if we've reviewed the police and we intend to reform the police, what the purposes of policing now as opposed to the way they were stated 20 years ago or 30 years ago. We have no statement in the outline business case of the national and local accountability arrangements for police that you can make any coherent and precise sense of at all. Weirdly, given this is supposed to be a business case, we have no agreed baseline figures against which we then measure how savings will take place against some future model we've got, and we haven't got a detailed scoping of what the organisational model for different policing options would look like, whether it's regional forces or a single national force, what would be their management structure and arrangements, because that would clearly affect their cost structure as you go forward. So the focus has been largely on how do we look at the various functions of policing, model up the potential efficiencies there. Now, that may sound as if I'm now being harshly critical of an exercise I was once part of, but was that ceremoniously bunged overboard? There could be bitterness there, but there's not. I think what I want you to focus on, because I think in Scotland we're suckers for statistics, if someone bungs out a big report with oodles of tables at the end, the one thing you can bet is nobody reads the tables. And if you throw in concepts like net present values and so on, almost nobody now bothers looking at all. They just assume if there's 40 pages of tables, that's solid. What I want to say is, you know, tables, like anything else, need treated with a degree of critical reflection. But the two elements of the business case are the analysis of how we could reorganise police functions, which Neil led, the Sustainable Policing Report, and the scale of efficiencies if we simply implemented that, that we could hope to gain through that process of reconstructing and re-engineering the business processes of policing itself. And we can project those across 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, depending on how far out you want to try and project them. As Neil said, that work did not start out to be work about structure. That was work about the functions of policing and how these functions of policing could be best conducted in Scotland and most efficiently conducted. So the second bit of the business case, this point here, was an attempt to take the work that Neil had led and then link it to three different structural options for the future of policing. And it's worth noting that the three structural options we've now explored were not the only options you could have imagined. There were people arguing very strongly, why aren't you looking at an integrated protection service that includes all of the blue light services in an area so we have a public protection approach to our communities and our citizens in Scotland? That was dumped as too complicated. Though, as I'll say, we've come onto some significant complexities even would remain within policing. The option of a national force for certain purposes and 32 local ones integrated into council, that went. So in a way, we narrowed the options down quite tightly at the outset. It's one, it's regional, three or four, or it's eight, but reformed as they go forwards. And what the outline business case is, to combine one and two, it takes the efficiency scopings out of the work Neil did and then tries to patch them onto, if you look at these different structural options, how would that work? Now, I need to be fair to the outline business case by giving you some quotations, because it's fairly devastating about its own basis. If I take the scoping of efficiencies we could achieve, it's made clear in some limited cases we've got actual evidence built up, bottom up, about policing functions, but in most other cases, efficiencies were estimated and validated for reasonableness using benchmarks. Now, there was a request as part of the process. Could we see the benchmarks then and how that was done? I haven't yet seen them. They're not published as part of the outline business case. On deliverability, this is in the outline business case. All of the options rely on significant changes, lower scale, blah, 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 blah. Payback time will be highly dependent on blah, 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 blah. I've written these documents before. What this says is, if this all goes belly up, don't blame me. This was all very complicated, and you'll have made bad decisions downline from my report, basically. I will have been right, you'll have got it wrong as it goes forward. Perhaps more importantly, and this is on the cost-benefit profiles in the outline business case, which gives you the figures that have been headlined in the media, that's a direct and verbatim quotation. To date, detailed assessment of risk, sensitivity and optimism bias for the cost-benefit profiles has not been undertaken. Now, you could say, if it hasn't, shouldn't someone now go back and do that? Because if there is a risk of mammoth groupthink here, that people just locked on to a preferred solution and haven't bothered exploring alternatives well enough, yeah, wouldn't it be nice for someone to come from outside and test that? So the report's quite honest. It's not saying this is Principia Mathematica and everything has worked out to the nth degree in a set of formula. It's saying a whole lot of assumptions have been made here, a whole lot of benchmarks from elsewhere have been used, a whole lot of extrapolations have been made, and these have not yet been tested for whether they are biased towards certain conclusions or not, whether if you varied the assumptions you make, you would end up with a slightly different picture of reform options. Let me just illustrate. Critical to the case is that the efficiencies Neil mentioned this morning are actually there. We could gain them. I think it's worth just a clear statement from those advocating this case. What percentage of the efficiencies identified are evidence-based? Now, we've looked at Scottish policing and we've worked bottom-up. Here's an alternative model. Here's how you save money. And how much is simply using benchmarks plucked from elsewhere? If benchmarks are being used, how were they used and how were they applied? For example, are we benchmarking with achievements other people have had? Or are we benchmarking with what they said in their business case? So we're now benchmarking our hypothetical benefits with their hypothetical benefits, but these benefits have actually never been realised by anybody. Particularly, given the outline business case uses Neil's work, which I think is a lot of merit, in the context of structural merger, have any of the benchmarks been taken from a context of structural merger and the disruption, anxiety and diversion from purpose and performance that structural mergers have been shown to bring about? It's interesting. The most logical benchmark would be Operation Quest down south, similar business process engineering approach being driven through just now by the UK government. Let me just put up what the UK government concluded. What they said was, this government does not support the imposition of structural changes in local forces, which will be seen by the public as creating vast and distant conglomerations, weakening their capacity to influence and hold to account those who keep them safe. Scarce resources in challenging times need to be focused on strengthening frontline policing, not bankrolling controversial measures with little public or political support. Now, their view was that exactly what Neil identified, better target operating models and driving that through, was how they will make efficiencies and change down south, and that structural mergers would be a diversion away from that. Now, I'm not saying they're right, but it is at least a contendable proposition that should be looked at in the context of the outline business case we've got here. To be precise, how do we attribute costs and benefits to structural options? How do you determine the costs of an option and the benefits of it if you haven't a baseline? What are you comparing what with? And if you haven't built a model of what a single force option would look like and therefore what its cost structure would be, how could you possibly tell, in comparison to eight forces, what one force would look like? If such a model exists, it is fair to say nobody's bothered publishing it. It is not in the outline business case. So we're comparing a known eight forces with a total unknown, which is a single force, and then extrapolating massive savings from moving from the one to the other. Now, some you could do. We shoot seven chief constables, and we end up with one. There's a saving straight away. You get rid of the cost of seven police boards, even if you might have greater costs for the one you're left with, depending on how it's put together, etc. But there's no other detailed modelling here. what percentage of the costs and benefits are based on analysis of actual evidence and what percentage by judgment? In other words, informed people have said our judgment is. If it's judgment, who are those people? I guess from this morning, no current Scottish Chief Constable was in the room at the time being invited to give their judgment on the matter on the grounds that it may have been a more challenging judgment than the group of people doing this exercise. But let me just give you an example. There is a table, Table 5.3, page 51, if you read your Bible nightly, which says if we look at outcome improvement, eight forces are projected across the next 15-year period were scored at an average of 1.86, defined as being very limited chance of improving outcomes. A single force was scored at 8.4%, which was defined as being a significant chance of improving outcomes. Now, again, I remind you, what these outcomes were was never stated, so what these people were rating, I have not the slightest idea. But we get some numbers there, and if you look at the table, you think, well, 1.86 is against 8.4, that's quite good, that's about four times. Until you think, no, this is just judgments with numbers put on it. The question then is, who was involved? How were they involved? Were any critical voices involved to kind of challenge any consensual judgments people were arriving at? Has this been subject to a process of wider validation? Has it been shoved out through the various associations, ACPOS, the superintendents, the police federation, so that a much wider range of people could give a judgment in percentage terms of what happens? But the moment you stick that on the table, it's now a fact, is the interesting thing, and tends to be treated as a fact. I'll give you an example in savings in staff and supplies. Tables 5.4 to 5.6 of the outline business case. It says for eight forces with reform, you can save 36 million. And in staff terms, this is officers, rising to 43 million savings if you move to one force. What? How do we arrive at that? What is it we've done to the eight forces that allows us to save the money, and what would we have done through one force that would save us money? Never stated, but I am told that these are the relativities that I should focus on. For non-police, non-officer staff, eight forces, 47 million, rising to 66 million. Again, that could be right. I simply don't know how one arrives at, and I don't know how it was arrived at because it's not published. On supplies, bizarrely precise. If it was eight forces, we could save 19 million. If it was a regional force set up, we could save about 21 million. And if it's one force, we can save 23. Now, anybody looking at it, I think that's really very precise. That's good. We can put that in the bank. Again, how do we arrive at that? My daughter is in secondary one just now. The thing she gets hammered into her by a maths teacher is always show you're working. Because if you show you're working, even if you get the sum wrong, you'll get some credit for it. This seems to be a case of people not showing they're working in case the sum is wrong. So we need not to become confused by this process. What we have here is, quite reasonably, a set of expert judgments, professional assumptions, policy assumptions, being put together and some numbers being put in. Some of it's soundly based, and if you go back to Neil's report, you can get real numbers. Yeah. Others of it, it's just how do you extrapolate from one thing to another, and it seems to be a highly judgmental process. But the point is, all of these things are the business case. If none of these things are reliable, there is absolutely no business case at all. It's gone. Piles of tables based on assumptions are no use to us unless we've been articulate and honest about the assumptions we're making, and we've tested what happens if we're wrong about those assumptions for the longer-term future of policing. I'd add that though the report comes replete with 10 to 15-year projections and net present values done across 15 years, in reality, the 10 to 15-year projections are simply based on assuming the first 5 years are right, and then it accumulates across 10 and 15. So these figures add no information whatsoever to what you're given for the first 5 years' projection. They're one and the same thing, merely extrapolated. There is no additional factual information contained therein. Ironically, given I've said all of this, if you take the financial case, as presented in the outline business case, and you do it across the 5 years for which we have solid projections, not merely extrapolations, weirdly, David's option and Jim Gallagher's option ends up the most net cost-effective across 5 years. You'd end up with three or four forces, which is just money you were concerned about, because that would net save you £186 million as opposed to 159 for eight forces and so on. But I make the point at the bottom that the difference between the 159 and 182 is 0.3% of base in any given year. That's such a small margin of error that, frankly, I don't think anybody would find it compelling if that was otherwise presented to them. My point here is simply to say, not there's no case for a single force, but this isn't it. If all you had were the way this has been put together, then you ain't going there. Which makes me feel there's probably, actually, a slightly different discussion, to be frankly had. And figures get in the way of having the frank discussion. The first thing to say is, I think, unquestionably, the Sustainable Policing Report identifies very major efficiency opportunities. Though, as Neil, with no irony this morning, said, Strathclyde's just getting on anyway, so we could just as well attribute that to eight force options as a single force option, and other forces are no doubt doing exactly the same just now. The critical thing, I think, is, in the past, have eight chief constables and eight police boards shown the remotest sign that they would actually truly get their act together around this and drive forward the efficiencies that are identified in the Sustainable Policing Report? And if your conclusion to that is no, and that herding cats is not the way you want to go forward, then the answer becomes, have one of them, because then you can possibly get a grip of them. So it strikes me that there's a cruder and arguable proposition in here that we need a franker discussion about. I think from this morning and early afternoon's discussion, two things become clear. We do need to factor in to all of this the accountability and outcomes bit, because, frankly, the agenda was a bit more cost-effective policing. It wasn't cheaper policing, whether it was effective or not. So we need to factor that in. And clearly, the issues about accountability will simply not go away. But if we wanted to build up new evidence, we need to resolve that. Is that actually what the business case is here? There are efficiency opportunities that would make us more cost-effective. We want to take them, but we're not convinced the current structure will allow that because it hasn't performed well in the past. Therefore, we now need to look at something different. Getting the performance requirement clear here seems to me to be the nub of the matter. What is it that ministers require as we go forward? Because I doubt any local councillors on a police board would object to the possibility of efficiency savings if they can be made while maintaining service to the public. I have never come across that in my life, and I have no reason to believe that would happen in the future. I suppose my end points would be this. An outline business case normally establishes whether or not there is enough here to be bothered doing further detailed work. That's the point of an outline business case. There is a danger here that it's being treated as if it was the basis for final decision-making and setting things in aspect. For all the reasons I've outlined about the weakness of the case, I don't think you could argue that for where we are just now. I blame ministers not at all for that. I was part of the group of people who were supposed to be advising here. It's patent we haven't done our job all that well across a period of about 6 months. There's not a credible case just now, but I think there's a real danger if we start to get into structural bingo here. You know, if we can't prove one, why not three or four? Why, you know, I mean, let's slow it down a bit, and as David said, get back to what the hell are we trying to achieve here. I think that is about then factoring back in outcomes and accountability. For example, would we be having as heated a discussion today, from a local government point of view, if there was a single police force to drive through these efficiencies that we all want, but there was a local police committee who the divisional commander reported to, had to get their policing plan signed off by, had to get the budget approved by, and so on. So that we've actually got accountability. Is anybody then going to the walls about a single police force? Now, I think there's a very fine line, as Ian Gray, I think, demonstrated earlier this year at Causeless Conference, when he spoke about a single police force. It transpired it was 33 police forces. It wasn't a single police force at all. There is a very fine line, actually, between a single police force, a 32 local forces integrated into a set of national functions that support them. That may be the sort of model we should be looking at and trying to tease out. We have to be honest, the Scottish Government has stated its preference, and it has a democratic mandate for that. So If we're going to claim as local government we have a democratic mandate, we can scarcely do that while thoroughly disrespecting MDLC's democratic mandate. So it may well be that what we need to do is stop just critiquing this and say, well, fine, how do we work with them to get this the form of policing we want for the future, in outcome terms, accountability terms, and so on. To me, it's about getting off what the Harvard School, looking at negotiation, call hard positional bargaining. We dig into positions as if we were in First World War trenches, and a war of attrition then takes place. Their argument is start off identifying mutual outcomes you want to achieve, and then work together to build around that. Don't get stuck in hard positions. I end with a picture that my daughter loves just now. There's an exhibition of Magritte on in London, and this is one of his most celebrated images. It's a picture of a pipe entitled "This Is Not a Pipe." Magritte's point is, it isn't a pipe. It's a two-dimensional image of a pipe. I kind of think that's where we are just now with the outline business case. It's not, there's nothing there, but it isn't the real article. It's a two-dimensional image at the present moment. And I think the responsibility we should take from a day like this is not just to comment on that, but to genuinely be willing to knuckle down and work with it to get to a mutually sound solution that respects the importance of the outcomes policing helps to deliver in Scotland. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much to Colin Mair for his presentation. Time for